Hello, future billionaires, and welcome back to another episode of the Invest Like a Billionaire podcast. I'm your co-host, Ben Frazier, joined by fellow co-host,
Bob Frazier.
And today we're going to do a top-of-mind episode on the fate of the U.S. dollar. So periodically, we will come on here and share our thoughts, these top-of-mind episodes, what are the hot topics, what are investors talking about, what are the headlines saying. And we like to dive deeper on this podcast than just the headlines. And there's been a lot of fear. We've actually been getting texts and emails from investors worried about the U.S. dollar losing its status as a reserve currency and the whole BRICS kind of arrangement coming out. We actually just did this presentation, and by we, I mean Bob, for our shareholder event just last week. We have an annual shareholder event for investors with Aspen Funds. And just took a little time to run through this. So we thought we'd share this information with all of our listeners here to just help you understand what's going on and the reality of these concerns. And should we even be concerned and what's going on here? This is the Invest Like a Billionaire podcast, where we uncover the alternative investments and strategies that billionaires use to grow wealth. The tools and tactics you'll learn from this podcast will make you a better investor and help you build legacy wealth. Join us as we dive into the world of alternative investments, uncover strategies of the ultra wealthy, discuss economics, and interview successful investors. Looking for passive investments done for you? With Aspen Funds, we help accredited investors that are looking for higher yields and diversification from the stock market. As a passive investor, we do all the work for you, making sure your money is working hard for you in alternative investments. In fact, our team invests alongside you in every deal so our interests are aligned. We focus on macro-driven alternative investments so your portfolio is best positioned for this economic environment. Get started and download your free economic report today. So Bob, take it away.
Yeah, and there's a lot of alarm about the U.S. dollar, as you pointed out. We get continually bombarded with questions from our listeners, and fair enough, let's answer the questions. But this is just the latest iteration of the same question that's been, I've seen maybe four or five times in the last 20 years, since the 80s, really 40 years. And the latest one is the BRICS countries. What about if they basically de-dollarize and now the dollar disappears in value? And I first want to say, if you believe your dollars are about to become valueless, please feel free to send them away. And that's tongue-in-cheek, but the point is they have a lot of value. And let's not forget that. But this was there was another iteration. This was the SDR, the IMF's depository receipts that they were going to create, and China was going to create a new currency there. That was 2015. There's always a new, dollar is about to die. Here's the latest iteration. And this is from, I believe this is Business Insider. It says, de-dollarization could become a reality as a BRICS alternative to the dollar could enjoy high prospects for success, a former White House advisor said. Joseph Sullivan, I know, who served as the staff economist for the White House Council of Economic Advisors during the Trump administration, wrote in Foreign Policy that a currency issued by Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, BRICS, would pose a unique threat to the dollar's dominance. There it is. But he goes on to say, Sullivan also noted that it would not spell the end of the dollar's reign. Oh, okay. Which still accounts for 84.3% of cross-border transactions, but possibly contribute to a multipolar regime in several currencies are dominant. In fact, some of the dollar's decline in dollar strength could be a good thing, he writes. At the moment, the greenback's high price costs the U.S. jobs and lowers exports. So the headline is certainly a lot more alarming than the detail when you actually read what he's actually saying. But let's look at what Joseph is talking about, what the concern is. Just a few charts as background, central bank reserves. And so if you're listening on this, you can pull up the YouTube later or look in the show notes and see the PowerPoint we're using. But central bank reserves are, so the central banks are the banks that manage the currencies of the various nations, and they may maintain reserves in other currencies in order to trade with those currencies and maintain exchange rates and be able to supply liquidity to commerce and other things. So right now, central bank reserves are 58% held in the U.S. dollar. So it's, and the number two currency is the euro. BRICS currencies are reserve only 3% of global central bank reserves are BRICS. So very low. Global trade today, China dominates global trade. BRICS, all in all, though, are only 18%, all cumulative. Foreign currency trade, it's the largest, most liquid market in the world.
Yep.
Literally $7.5 trillion are traded every single day in foreign exchange. So that means the currencies are changed, yep. Right? 87% of which is traded in the U.S. dollar. So 87%. The U.S. dollar is just by far the most dominant currency, 33% in the euro. So you can see. So the dollar is very dominant. This chart is actually from the Federal Reserve, and it shows an index of currency use as a combination of foreign currency reserve trade and foreign exchange. You can see over time, the dollar's dominance has dropped from, let's say, 72%-ish around there to 60-whatever percent, 65%. 65%-ish, somewhere around there, over the last 20 years. And the euro is taking some dominance. The euro came onto the scene about 20 years ago, roughly. And you see the other currencies are hanging out there. The Chinese currency is ticking up a tiny bit. But really, it's the dollar is certainly predominant. The euro is a solid number two. And really, nothing else is really even rates. Here's what I think, why a BRICS currency is unlikely. I want to first just hit that. I think it's actually not going to happen. And you've got to realize, so what they're talking about is actually creating a brand new currency. Okay, so it's like the Europeans did with the euro, they actually create a brand new currency. Okay, that is a massive undertaking. So they would have to make a new currency. And it's one thing, you can't just make a currency, you have to make it valuable. You have to back it. You have to create financial plumbing. You have to create bonds in this. Create a place to put the money. A central trade system. You need to establish a central bank that would require a brand new central bank that doesn't exist today to be built, and they would have to agree who's going to man that central bank, who's going to govern that central bank, what the exchange rates are amongst the constituent currencies. And here's a biggie. So if you look at the BRICS countries, China is pretty much all of BRICS. The other countries really don't rate much. China's the number two world economy, and the other countries really don't count. And here's the thing, is China's interests are not aligned with the other BRICS countries. All right, the president, they've had a goal to basically, the stated goal is to make the Chinese yuan a dominant international currency. You can't have both a BRICS currency and a Chinese currency. So they're really not aligned. And I think the only thing these countries, the BRICS countries, have in common really is let's say more despotic regimes and a hatred of the U.S. dollar and hatred of U.S. hegemony. And that's not a unifying force. Right? The fact that you hate something does not unify you. So it would require a whole new central bank, new currency systems, payment systems, swaps and hedging systems, this whole financial plumbing that is incredibly complex and incredibly just a ton of work and would take a very long time to do. It also require the BRICS countries to agree on exchange rates and convertibility to their own currencies and a system to continually rebalance and require the BRICS countries to give up capital controls. So right now, the Chinese yuan, like everything in the country, is tightly controlled. You cannot trade Chinese yuan inside and outside the country. They use capital controls to try and control the currency and maintain its value. And unlike the dollar, which is freely traded wherever, however, whenever people want, you can do whatever you want with a dollar. You can't with a Chinese currency. So they're going to have to stop that. And that's part of the way they control their country. And again, I just don't think it's very likely. I just want to make a quick comparison to the euro. So the euro took nearly two decades to implement, And they set up a brand new central bank. They staffed it with some very smart people. They built the whole financial plumbing system. They made a transition plan. And they all abandoned their own currency. So the Deutschmark doesn't exist. The French franc doesn't exist anymore. They were rolled into, and now those countries use the euro. So they decommissioned their own central banks, each individual country, and decommissioned their own currencies, made an exchange system into the euro. And today, the euro accounts for 20% of global reserves, and you saw how much trades. But it took a long time and took a massive amount of effort.
I'm not an expert in the euro or the history of the euro, but it appears to me that just the political alignment, even the geographical alignment of the countries that use the euro and the trade alliances seem a lot different than the proposal between the BRICS countries. It feels very different.
Well, the European countries have a lot in common with each other. And there's a lot that's not in common. There's a lot of differences between Greece and Italy and Sweden and Denmark. But they share borders. They share ideologies to a large degree. The cultures are somewhat different. Languages are somewhat different. But there is a lot of commonalities. They are Europe.
Right.
There's not a lot of commonalities between South Africa or Saudi Arabia and China. Okay. There's just not. And I think everybody just don't like necessarily being under U.S. hegemony, where the U.S. is dictating policies and these kind of things. But again, that's not going to drive enough effort, or it's not going to drive enough demand to go create a whole currency. So we'll see. I just want to look at the U.S. versus the BRICS countries and a BRICS kind of economy, and I'll compare it to China. The U.S. is the world's largest economy. It's backed by the world's strongest military. Why does that matter? The military is what secures trade routes. And if you look in history, the history since 1945, global trade has been policed by the world's largest military, the United States. So and this is really historically an anomaly. Really, 100 years ago, there was no such thing as free trade across the globe.
Right.
And the nearest thing to it was the British, who had the largest navy, and they policed partly the oceans and maintained free trade routes. The whole age of piracy and all that, the golden age of Blackbeard and all that, that was real, where trade couldn't exist. It's all, global trade is maintained by the U.S. military. And the U.S. military is the only military that actually has a capability of projecting power in any significant way, meaning we can go park a navy and an air force, pretty much, in front of anywhere and control that part of the world. No other nation has that capability. And what it means is we can enforce global trade. U.S. also has rule of law. I know being an American, it can feel like it's pretty darn chaotic, and there's not a lot of respect for law, a lot of political unity, or all those things. But the truth is, our laws protect private property, and they protect the debt and mortgages and hedges and all these different financial plumbing things. And it's very well understood, well documented, and it's very deep with law that actually works. Compared to, for example, let's take China. Let's say who knows what, right? They're changing the rules, and they could simply nationalize your business or change something that puts you completely out of business. And we've seen that. We've seen them do this. The U.S. has the world's deepest and most liquid financial markets. China, which is the largest component of a potential BRICS currency, is a nation in decline. As I've pointed out in my megatrends, and this is shocking to some people, and if this is news to you, please look into this, because this is a fact that the China is about to lose about half of its population in the next 75 years. So the population of China will drop by half. Well, that means its GDP drops by half unless they double their productivity per person. And that's unlikely. And two-thirds of its workforce, they're a nation in decline. And this is all from the UN population database and forecasts that I'm pulling my data from. And there's a confidence factor with their projections, right? How sure are we? It's 100% sure. China is one of the most clear nations at all, because we can see how many young women they have, where the women are the ones that have the babies, and young women. We see what their birth rates are, and there's simply not hardly any young women in the country. And through forced abortion, through the one-child policy, through gender selection in that policy, whether they favored males, it's a nation that has seen its peak for sure. They're a police state. They have no free elections. There's no free press, freedom of religion or speech. Would you want to go park all your money over there if you were a multimillionaire and start your sole business over there? I mean, you'd know you're at risk, right? That's endemic socialism and corruption, tightly controlled capital markets, that's illiquid with no rule of law. You cross the government, you're thrown in jail. They don't have free elections. They don't have free press. They don't have private property rights like we have. So it's simply not a place you would ever want to park money or trust to manage money. The dollar is extraordinary in history. The only thing that comes close, I guess, in modern history would be the pound sterling, which dominated for a couple hundred years. You know, as they said, the sun never set on the British Empire, right? Because it was durable and they were truly all over. So dollars can be used to pay for imports in nearly any country. Dollars are held as foreign currency reserves. The dollar is considered stable and safe from long-term fluctuations and devaluations. It's also versatile because dollar reserves can be used for any purpose. And the foreign currency reserves of all five BRIC nations are actually in the U.S. dollar, right? Almost entirely. Dollars can be converted into other currencies. Dollars can invest in U.S. assets such as treasury bonds, which are the gold standard of global investment because they're considered risk-free. So when you're trading a lot of money, you have $1 billion you have to park overnight or for 7 days, what are you going to buy? Well, you want to buy U.S. bonds because you just get, they're so liquid, you can buy $1 billion worth of those things in a day, and you can sell them the next day, and you're not going to lose any money. And nothing's going to happen to it. It's a good asset. Dollars can service debt in any country. In fact, most foreign governments' debt is issued in U.S. dollars. So again, all that, it's just the dollar is just by far the most prolific and best currency in the world. Here's another point I want to make too, is the currencies must be desirable by all parties. So I just want to put a scenario out there as I was thinking about this. Let's say Saudi Arabia, who basically exports about $500 billion a year in oil. And let's say they say, we are going to only accept a BRICS currency for our oil. So you have to, they're going to, let's say they formulate this new currency, and to buy our oil, you have to buy it in a BRIC. Okay, so then first of all, it wouldn't affect the U.S., right? Because we don't import Saudi oil hardly at all. But Europe does. So Europe would then say, okay, we will take our euros and we will convert it into BRICS. Then Saudi Arabia gets a bunch of BRICS. And what are BRICS good for? Well, you can dissolve it into its five constituent currencies of rubles and Chinese yuan. So what are they going to do with rubles? What are the Saudis going to do? What are the Saudis going to do with Chinese yuans? They don't want anything from over there. They want to build buildings. They want to build dams. That's going to be euro. That's going to be primarily Europeans are going to do that. They're going to want euros. They're going to have to switch it all back to euros. They don't want the stuff that these countries have, which is pretty much raw materials. And how can they spend it? And then, okay, so then they got all these BRICS. Then they're going to have to store it someplace. So they got to have billions of dollars worth of temporary money storage. What are they going to store it in? Chinese government bonds? I just don't think anyone has any confidence in that. The number one place to store money is U.S. government bonds because they're very safe. And here's a chart you can see. This is since the 1970s. This is 55 years of the U.S. dollar. And you can see, in spite of all the fear, the dollar just motions along. And it's not that volatile. It does go, it has its ups and downs, but it's certainly not crashed. And right. Even when the euro came, everybody could have said, that's going to destroy the dollar. Well, it didn't. So yeah, you can see the euro coming in there. So dollar's been very stable. So the bottom line, and I have actually said this for well over a decade, that the U.S. will be the world's strongest currency for at least the next several decades. Well, I'm extending that out. It's still going to be the strongest world's currency for the next several decades. There's nothing comparing. There's nothing, no comparison. The euro is the closest, and it's a decent currency, but it has a lot more problems than the dollar does. And certainly every other currency has more problems. And the bottom line is those propagating dollar fear are selling their protection packages.
Yep.
And so just take that with a grain of salt. And they're wanting you to do that. Now, the final thing I want to say just about the dollar here is, let's say the dollar did crash by half. Let's say you woke up and the dollar was crashed by half. So that means you could exchange it for half as many euros, and oil would be priced in double because we're importing it. All imports would go up and by half. But on the other hand, our exports would drop by half in value. So that means you could buy an iPhone for half the price if you're overseas. It means you could buy a Miami beachfront condo for half the price it was yesterday. You could buy two Boeing airplanes for the price of one Airbus. Guess what would happen to Boeing airplanes?
Yeah.
They'd be crazy. U.S. exports would explode as we became the cheapest oil producer by far than anyone else. U.S. manufacturing costs would drop by half, making the U.S. twice as attractive as a manufacturing destination. The stock market would skyrocket in anticipation of explosive earnings. So you got to realize the dollar is backed by a massive economy with incredible places to invest. This is the best country in the world to invest in.
Yeah.
The best stock markets, the best companies, the best real estate, and all that stuff would be on sale to a foreigner by half. It would quickly, money would flood in. And so the dollar is simply don't buy the fear.
Yeah, I think That's exactly it, is it's generally fear-based, and whoever's propagating the dollar's about to crash, it's generally a headline, and there's usually an angle behind the motivation to say that. It's a recurring theme that is all. There's always the demise of the dollar for some reason or other, and this happens to be the latest in the ongoing commentary on it. But I do think this is pretty compelling because a currency doesn't live in a vacuum. It's backed by this economy that is very strong, largest in the world, and it's not going anywhere.
If you want to buy an iPhone, you're going to need a dollar to do it.
Yeah.
If you want to buy a Boeing, you're going to need a dollar to do it.
Yeah.
So we got a massive economy that is extremely vibrant and innovative. So best companies in the world are headquartered here.
Yeah. What do you think are the primary reasons that they're exploring this? To your point earlier, it doesn't seem like the reality of this actually happening, where they're formalizing a brand new currency, creating a new central bank, and all the financial plumbing required to do that. It's probably not going to happen. So what's really the motivation behind these countries doing it? It seems more like political posturing, right? To try to get things in their favor from
Putin, who is pretty peeved that he's under sanctions, and he doesn't like having dollar hegemony where we can dictate what happens, what he can and can't do. He wants to be out from under that. Let's establish our own currency. And then that kind of resonates with the Chinese because they hate the dollar. They think the Chinese should be the greatest country in the world with the economy, and they're trying hard to make their currency better, and they want more esteem and recognition globally. So they want their currency. So they're saying, us too. But it's not. It's really...
And then Brazil and the other countries, what are the
same thing. It's just they don't like U.S. hegemony, where we're dictating what happens in the fight to their... They want to be free of the shackles of the U.S. dollar. But let's hit another question, too. One of our writers wrote in, says, what about the U.S. debt?
Yeah.
And so there's this idea that our deficit spending... So there's two components of debt, right? One is deficit spending, where we spend a lot more money as the U.S., then we take in taxes.
Yep.
And then that accumulates as we issue bonds, we borrow money and we issue bonds in order to fund that deficit. So it accumulates over time, and that it has been on fire. Right? Both the deficits have been extreme.
Fire in a negative way, where we're taking a lot more.
Extreme and negative, and the debt has been compounding rapidly. When you've got Obama, they started at the end of the Bush era with the great financial crisis stimulus, and then Obama took it on steroids. We've had a lot of spend and tax and spend, or just spend and don't tax kind of leadership in place. And, the deficit spending through Obama era went through the roof. Trump didn't scale it back. And then you look at
interest rates are going up now, so the cost of that debt.
And then the stimulus with the COVID was incredible, what they did. And meanwhile, so the government just continues to expand and expand. And then, so now the concern is, how does this end? How does that end? And interest rates are now going up. I mean, so the U.S. is paying a large portion of its tax or its interest bill.
Yeah, keeps going up.
Is keep going. So what happens to this? Does this mean the end of the dollar and the end of the U.S. dollar confidence in the dollar and the dollar crash? Let me give you a couple perspectives here.
Yeah.
First, let's give an international perspective. The dollar's value is determined by its peers.
Yes.
So the value of a dollar is determined how it trades relative to a euro or a yen, right? They're all doing the same thing. So they're all deficit spending as bad as we are. So if somebody decided to not deficit spend and decided to have a great currency, you would see it rise in value. The other thing is that, so the U.S. has had a debt-to-GDP ratio over 100% in the past. In fact, it had it about 70 years ago. Is almost as high as it was now, and we extremely high debt, and we recovered from it. What happened?
Yep.
That was 1945, in the war debts. It is unfortunate that even without a war,
we
managed to get ourselves in the same pickle. But how did the U.S. get out of it? Here's what happened. And this was there's a great book that I loved, and it's by a couple of Harvard economists called This Time is Different. It's by Carmen Reinhart, Ken Rogoff and Carmen Reinhart. And they studied 800 years of financial crisis And I love that book. But they came up with another study. They showed basically how deficit spending had been handled throughout history. And in most cases, high deficit spending was not answered by defaults. In other words, we're not going to pay our debt back, where a lot of people today think that's what the answer is going to be. But the truth is, moderate levels of inflation are how it's been answered.
Right.
So if you think about this, so if there's inflation, that means it takes more money to buy something tomorrow than it does today. But it means it takes less money in real terms to pay off a debt tomorrow
yep.
than it does today. It's because debt is negative money. And so what happens, and I've said in the past, I said inflation is a massive transfer of wealth from savers to borrowers.
Yep.
So if you can, I was in Zimbabwe in 2007, and when they have a currency crisis. And by the way, you know what, when their currency failed, the Zimbabwe dollar, you know what started happening, what they used for currency? The US dollar. That was the only thing that started trading. But literally I was there when a guy would take a grocery sack full of money to fill a gas tank with a car. And a pastor there went to his congregation before all this happened, and a guy I knew, and said, guys, he saw what was happening. He said, guys, do whatever you can to borrow as much money as you possibly can and buy real estate.
Uh-huh.
And he bought a 300,000 Mediterranean mansion, think of a 6,000 square foot mansion, right? For 300,000 bucks. He literally paid it off with a grocery bag full of money a couple years later. You think about that.
Yeah.
What paid it off? Inflation did. Inflation debt. So debt is diminished by inflation. So all it takes, at 8% inflation, that debt drops by half in 10 years.
Right.
At 6% inflation, it's a little bit longer. I have the calculation somewhere, don't have it in front of me, but you get the idea. So a little bit of inflation actually solves it. And this is historically how high debt nations have solved their debt crisis, by a little bit of inflation.
Yep.
Is it possible that we get so we start borrowing so much, the interest rates scope so high, we start having to print even more money, and it gets into a spiral. So here's what happened in the 2008 financial crisis, right? They basically printed $3.7 trillion worth of money, and the Federal Reserve monetized it. So I believe before we actually get to a real crisis like that, they'll basically tap the Federal Reserve on the shoulder and say, hey, buy this debt. What that means is, yeah, the government borrows the money. So you buy a bond, you go to your broker, you buy a bond, and the money goes to the government. And then they say to the Federal Reserve, buy this from us. So the Federal Reserve prints money. Now they don't actually print money, but you get, I'm simplifying. And they buy those bonds. So now the Federal Reserve owns the debt of the U.S. government. And they bought $3.7 trillion by the end of the Great Financial, by about mid-2010. What if they said, don't pay us back? They could have. What would have happened? Nothing. Nothing would have happened. They just said, don't pay us back. Yeah, forgive it. And that was shocking to me, because I was, at that time, was a hard money economist. I was an Austrian economist and hard money economist. And I realized that, one, when they did that, I expected hyperinflation, but it didn't happen. And we're struggling with deflation.
Right.
I believe the Federal Reserve could monetize and get us out of a lot of this. Now, what happens at some point, it is inflationary. So if the government monetizes a lot of money, so let's say the Federal Reserve monetize the entire U.S. deficit, right? And just monetize it. Then I think confidence in the dollar would drop.
Sure.
And that means the dollar's value would drop. Would you want to own that or a euro? You'd want to own a euro at that point. So the confidence would drop, and so the U.S. currency would drop in value. It wouldn't drop precipitously. It would drop some, right? And
yeah,
with a more severe drop. But then that's its own fix. So what happens is, when you see currencies drop, inflation begins to happen, because imports
right.
cost more money. And then as soon as you have inflation, well, that wipes, start wiping out the debt. You follow me? So it really is. It's not as bad as people say, but that said, I am an economic conservative, and we actually should be trying to balance our budget, and we shouldn't be spending as much money. And we have too much government and too much government spending and too much weight in it, and it really should be checked, and we need to check our politicians. But that said, it's not existential crisis. It's not an existential crisis. It is weird. This U.S. government is going to continue and going to be very successful, and our economy is going to continue to be very successful.
Yeah. I think you made the point, but so many people think of the U.S. or the U.S. dollar, the economy, in a vacuum, right? There's a lot of problems in our economy. There's a lot of problems politically, et cetera.
Sure are.
But it's all relative, right? It's the way the U.S. dollar is priced is relative to other economies and other currencies. And so you have to look at the broader scope of, okay, the U.S. dollar is not perfect. The U.S. economy is not perfect, but it's still the best option we have.
Right. And I want to make one more point here too. So the only time countries go back, so U.S. cannot go bankrupt. And here's the reason. The only time countries go bankrupt is when you borrow money in a currency you cannot print. Okay? Which happens.
Yeah.
Okay? Happens in Brazil. Happens in Argentina. They borrow money in dollars. They can't print dollars, last I heard. At some point, they can't pay that back. And that's the problem. It's also a problem in Europe because they can't print euros. The individual countries that are doing their debt borrowing, spending, they can't print their currencies. And so if there's bankruptcy, it's going to happen. It's going to be in Europe and it's going to be in other places. In the United States, we can never go bankrupt because it's called the rights of seigniorage. Seigniorage is the right to make money. And as long as you can make money, you can really never go bankrupt. Now, you can devalue that money.
Sure.
But again, as I pointed out, devaluing that money by printing too much solves the problem. It is self-correcting.
Yeah. Wow, that's very interesting. Thanks, Michael, for writing in the question. And definitely love the feedback on some of these topics as we talk about them.
And bottom line, guys, don't bet against America. Most successful investor of all times is Warren Buffett. He says, don't bet against America. And you bet against America, you're betting against me. You're betting against him. You're betting against the entrepreneur, the inventor. We're innovating. We are creating. We're adapting. We're changing what we're doing collectively to create a vibrant economy. And it's not a thing. It's human beings who are constantly innovating, changing, adapting. Don't bet against that. Don't ever bet against that.
Yeah.
So.
Awesome. Good stuff. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Hopefully you got a lot out of this episode, and feel free to share it and rate and review. We always appreciate that. And tune in next time.